The door to the parlor opened, and Mildred stood there looking in at them, looking at Beatty and then at Montag. Behind her, the walls of the room were flooded with green and yellow and orange fireworks, sizzling and bursting to some music composed almost completely of trap drums, tom-toms, and cymbals. Her mouth moved, and she was saying something, but the sound covered it. Beatty knocked his pipe into the palm of his pink hand, studied the ashes as if they were a symbol to be diagnosed, and searched for meaning. "You must understand that our civilization is so vast that we can't have our minorities upset and stirred. Ask yourself, what do we want in this country above all? People want to be happy, isn't that right? Haven't you heard it all your life? I want to be happy, people say. Well, aren't they? Don't we keep them moving? Don't we give them fun? That's all we live for, isn't it? For pleasure? For titillation? And you must admit, our culture provides plenty of these." "Yes." Montag could lip-read what Mildred was saying in the doorway. He tried not to look at her mouth, because then Beatty might turn and read what was there, too. "Colored people don't like Little Black Sambo. Burn it. White people don't feel good about Uncle Tom's Cabin. Burn it. Someone's written a book on tobacco and cancer of the lungs. Cigarette people are weeping. Burn the book. Serenity, Montag. Peace, Montag. Take your fight outside. Better yet, into the incinerator. Funerals are unhappy and pagan. Eliminate them, too. 5 minutes after a person is dead, he's on his way to the big flu. The incinerator's serviced by helicopters all over the country. 10 minutes after death, a man's a speck of black dust. Let's not quibble over individuals with memoriams. Forget them. Burn all. Burn everything. Fire is bright, and fire is clean." The fireworks died in the parlor behind Mildred. She had stopped talking at the same time, a miraculous coincidence. Montag held his breath. "There was a girl next door," he said slowly. "She's gone now. I think dead. I can't even remember her face, but she was different. How did she happen?" Beatty smiled. "Here or there, that's bound to occur. Clarice McClellan. We've a record on her family. We've watched them carefully. Heredity and environment are funny things. You can't rid yourself of all the odd ducks in just a few years. The home environment can undo a lot you try to do at school. That's why we lowered the kindergarten age year after year until now we're almost snatching them from the cradle. We had some false alarms on the McClellans when they lived in Chicago. Never found a book. Uncle had a mixed record, antisocial. The girl, she was a time bomb. The family had been feeding her subconscious, I'm sure, from what I saw of her school record. She didn't want to know how a thing was done, but why. That can be embarrassing. You ask why to a lot of things, and you wind up very unhappy indeed if you keep at it. The poor girl's better off dead." "Yes, dead." "Luckily, queer ones like her don't happen often. We know how to nip most of them in the bud early. You can't build a house without nails and wood. If you don't want a house built, hide the nails and wood. If you don't want a man unhappy politically, don't give him two sides to a question to worry him. Give him one. Better yet, give him none. Let him forget there's such a thing as war. If the government is inefficient, top-heavy, and tax-mad, better it be all those than that people worry over it. Peace, Montag. Give the people contests they win by remembering the words to more popular songs or the names of state capitals or how much corn Iowa grew last year. Cram them full of non-combustible data. Chalk them so damn full of facts they feel stuffed, but absolutely brilliant with information. Then they'll feel they're thinking. They'll get a sense of motion without moving, and they'll be happy because facts of that sort don't change. Don't give them any slippery stuff like philosophy or sociology to tie things up with. That way lies melancholy. Any man who can take a TV wall apart and put it back together again, and most men can nowadays, is happier than any man who tries to slide rule, measure, and equate the universe, which just won't be measured or equated without making man feel bestial and lonely. I know, I've tried it. To hell with it. So bring on your clubs and parties, your acrobats and magicians, your daredevils, jet cars, motorcycle helicopters, your sex and heroin, more of everything to do with automatic reflex. If the drama is bad, if the film says nothing, if the play is hollow, sting me with the theremin, loudly. I'll think I'm responding to the play when it's only a tactile reaction to vibration. But I don't care. I just like solid entertainment.
Beatty got up.
I must be going. Lecture's over. I hope I've clarified things. The important thing for you to remember, Montag, is we're the Happiness Boys, the Dixie Duo, you and I and the others. We stand against the small tide of those who want to make everyone unhappy with conflicting theory and thought. We have our fingers in the dike. Hold steady. Don't let the torrent of melancholy and drear philosophy drown our world. We depend on you. I don't think you realize how important you are, we are, to our happy world as it stands now.
Beatty shook Montag's limp hand. Montag still sat, as if the house were collapsing about him, and he could not move in the bed. Mildred had vanished from the door.
One last thing, said Beatty. At least once in his career, every fireman gets an itch. What do the books say, he wonders. Oh, to scratch that itch, eh? Well, Montag, take my word for it. I've had to read a few in my time to know what I was about. And the books say nothing. Nothing you can teach or believe. They're about non-existent people, figments of imagination, if they're fiction. And if they're non-fiction, it's worse. One professor calling another an idiot. One philosopher screaming down another's gullet. All of them running about, putting out the stars and extinguishing the sun. You come away lost.
Well, then, what if a fireman, accidentally, really not intending anything, takes a book home with him?
Montag twitched. The open door looked at him with its great vacant eye. A natural error. Curiosity alone, said Beatty. We don't get over anxious or mad. We let the fireman keep the book 24 hours. If he hasn't burned it by then, we simply come burn it for him.
Of course. Montag's mouth was dry.
Well, Montag, will you take another later shift today? Will we see you tonight, perhaps?
I don't know, said Montag.
What?
Beatty looked faintly surprised. Montag shut his eyes.
I'll be in later, maybe. We'd certainly miss you if you didn't show, said Beatty, putting his pipe in his pocket thoughtfully.
I'll never come in again, thought Montag.
Get well and keep well, said Beatty.
He turned and went through the open door.
Montag watched through the window as Beatty drove away in his gleaming yellow flame-colored Beetle with the black char-colored tires. Across the street and down the way, the other houses stood with their flat fronts. What was it Clarice had said one afternoon?
No front porches. My uncle says there used to be front porches. And people sat there, sometimes at night, talking when they wanted to talk, rocking, and not talking when they didn't want to talk. Sometimes they just sat there and thought about things, turned things over. My uncle says the architects got rid of the front porches because they didn't look well, but my uncle says that was merely rationalizing it. The real reason hidden underneath might be they didn't want people sitting like that, doing nothing, rocking, talking. That was the wrong kind of social life. People talked too much, and they had time to think. So they ran off with the porches. And the gardens, too. Not many gardens anymore to sit around in. And look at the furniture. No rocking chairs anymore. They're too comfortable. Get people up and running around. My uncle says, and my uncle, and my uncle. Her voice faded.
Montag turned and looked at his wife, who sat in the middle of the parlor talking to an announcer, who in turn was talking to her.
Mrs. Montag, he was saying, this, that, and the other. Mrs. Montag,
something else, and still another. The converter attachment, which had cost them $100, automatically supplied her name whenever the announcer addressed his anonymous audience, leaving a blank where the proper syllables could be filled in. A special spot Wavex scrambler also caused his televised image in the area immediately about his lips to mouth the vowels and consonants beautifully. He was a friend, no doubt of it, a good friend.
Mrs. Montag, now look right here.
Her head turned, though she quite obviously was not listening. Montag said, "It's only a step from not going to work today to not working tomorrow to not working at the firehouse ever again."
"You are going to work tonight, though, aren't you?"
said Mildred. "I haven't decided. Right now I've got an awful feeling I want to smash things and kill things."
"Go take the Beetle."
"No, thanks."
"Keys to the Beetle are on the night table. I always like to drive fast when I feel that way. You get it up around 95 and you feel wonderful. Sometimes I drive all night and come back and you don't know it. It's fun out in the country. You hit rabbits, sometimes you hit dogs. Go take the Beetle."
"No, I don't want to this time. I want to hold on to this funny thing. God, it's gotten big on me. I don't know what it is. I'm so damned unhappy. I'm so mad, and I don't know why. I feel like I'm putting on weight. I feel fat. I feel like I've been saving up a lot of things and don't know what. Might even start reading books."
"They'd put you in jail, wouldn't they?"
She looked at him as if he were behind the glass wall. He began to put on his clothes, moving restlessly about the bedroom. "Yes, and it might be a good idea before I hurt someone. Did you hear Beatty? Did you listen to him? He knows all the answers. He's right. Happiness is important. Fun is everything. And yet I kept sitting there saying to myself, I'm not happy. I'm not happy."
"I am,"
Mildred's mouth beamed,
"and proud of it."
"I'm going to do something," said Montag. "I don't even know what yet, but I'm going to do something big."
"I'm tired of listening to this junk,"
said Mildred, turning from him to the announcer again. Montag touched the volume control on the wall, and the announcer was speechless.
"Millie?"
He paused. "This is your house as well as mine. I feel it's only fair that I tell you something now. I should have told you before, but I wasn't even admitting it to myself. I have something I want you to see, something I put away and hid during the past year, now and again, once in a while. I didn't know why, but I did it, and I never told you." He took hold of a straight-back chair and moved it slowly and steadily into the hall near the front door and climbed up on it and stood for a moment like a statue on a pedestal, his wife standing under him, waiting. Then he reached up and pulled back the grill of the air conditioning system and reached far back inside to the right and moved still another sliding sheet of metal and took out a book. Without looking at it, he dropped it to the floor. He put his hand back up and took out two books, and moved his hand down and dropped the two books to the floor. He kept moving his hand and dropping books, small ones, fairly large ones, yellow, red, green ones. When he was done, he looked down upon some 20 books lying at his wife's feet. "I'm sorry," he said. "I didn't really think, but now it looks as if we're in this together." Mildred backed away, as if she were suddenly confronted by a pack of mice that had come up out of the floor. He could hear her breathing rapidly, and her face was paled out, and her eyes were fastened wide. She said his name over, twice, three times. Then, moaning, she ran forward, seized a book, and ran toward the kitchen incinerator. He caught her, shrieking. He held her, and she tried to fight away from him, scratching. "No, Millie, no. Wait. Stop it, will you? You don't know. Stop it." He slapped her face. He grabbed her again and shook her. She said his name and began to cry. "Millie," he said, "listen. Give me a second, will you? We can't do anything. We can't burn these. I want to look at them. At least look at them once. Then, if what the captain says is true, we'll burn them together. Believe me, we'll burn them together. You must help me." He looked down into her face and took hold of her chin and held her firmly. He was looking not only at her, but for himself and what he must do in her face. "Whether we like this or not, we're in it. I've never asked for much from you in all these years, but I ask it now. I plead for it. We've got to start somewhere here, figuring out why we're in such a mess. You and the medicine nights and the car and me and my work, we're headed right for the cliff, Millie. God, I don't want to go over. This isn't going to be easy. We haven't anything to go on, but maybe we can piece it out and figure it and help each other. I need you so much right now, I can't tell you. If you love me at all, you'll put up with this 24, 48 hours. That's all I ask. Then it'll be over. I promise, I swear. And if there's something here, just one little thing, out of a whole mess of things, maybe we can pass it on to someone else." She wasn't fighting anymore, so he let her go. She sagged away from him and slid down the wall and sat on the floor, looking at the books. Her foot touched one, and she saw this and pulled her foot away.
That woman the other night, Millie, you weren't there. You didn't see her face. And Clarice, you never talked to her. I talked to her. And men like Beatty are afraid of her. I can't understand it. Why should they be so afraid of someone like her? But I kept putting her alongside the firemen in the house last night, and I suddenly realized I didn't like them at all, and I didn't like myself at all anymore. And I thought maybe it would be best if the firemen themselves were burnt.
Guy.
The front door voice called softly. Mrs. Montag. Mrs. Montag. Someone here. Someone here. Mrs. Montag. Mrs. Montag. Someone here. Softly. They turned to stare at the door, and the books toppled everywhere. Everywhere in heaps.
Beatty, said Mildred.
It can't be him.
He's come back, she whispered.
The front door voice called again softly. Someone here?
We won't answer.
Montague lay back against the wall, and then slowly sank to a crouching position and began to nudge the books, bewilderedly, with his thumb, his forefinger. He was shivering, and he wanted above all to shove the books up through the ventilator again, but he knew he could not face Beatty again. He crouched, and then he sat, and the voice of the front door spoke again more insistently. Montag picked a single small volume from the floor. Where do we begin? He opened the book halfway and peered at it. We begin by beginning, I guess.
He'll come in, said Mildred, and burn us and the books.
The front door voice faded at last. There was a silence. Montag felt the presence of someone beyond the door, waiting, listening. Then the footsteps going away down the walk and over the lawn. Let's see what this is, said Montag. He spoke the words haltingly and with a terrible self-consciousness. He read a dozen pages here or there and came at last to this. It is computed that 11,000 persons have at several times suffered death rather than submit to break their eggs at the smaller end. Mildred sat across the hall from him.
What does it mean? Doesn't mean anything. The captain was right.
Here now, said Montague. We'll start over again. At the beginning.